Let's bring in our activist of the week. She began her teaching career as an educator at a no excuses school in New York City. She left that school and is now a fourth grade teacher at a public school in Maine. You can find her blogging at emilytalmadge.com. Emily, what is it like to be a no excuses teacher?
In a word, it was horrific. I had taught in a regular public school for 3 years prior and had really no idea about these charter schools. I had kind of like heard all the hoopla and the propaganda and the Waiting for Superman. So I decided to try a year at one of these schools. And within just a few weeks, I realized that I had made a really, really big mistake. And I was miserable. I mean, whatever you have heard is true. I mean, it really felt like I was more of a prison guard. I know that sounds strong, but I felt like that was more of what I was doing, was like nonstop enforcing of rules and catching kids and very scripted lessons. It was really demoralizing, and I barely hung on for the year that I was there.
It's just within the past couple of weeks that there was a, you know, pretty shocking video released from a no excuses school where a teacher was berating that student. I mean,
I didn't treat the kids that way. I don't think.
We were not accusing you of treating kids that way.
To be fair though, there were times when I would kind of watch myself from the outside and like, I can't believe I'm doing this. But when I saw that video, my first thought was like, yup, that looks very familiar. And in fact, I watched it a couple times and then had to stop because it brought back like PTSD from what we experienced. So for me, when I saw that video was very accurate, because I remember reading some comments and people saying like, well, you don't know what like the context was. This might have been taken out of... No, that was not taken out of context. What that teacher did in that moment was classic at one of these schools. I mean, it wasn't like nonstop berating these kids, but that kind of behavior that teacher showed would have been normal. I mean, I saw that kind of thing all the time and have some pretty, pretty awful memories, to the point where, you know, the longer I worked there, the more I thought, oh my God, how is this happening and how do people not know about this? And, you know, I kept thinking like, this is the kind of thing that like history is going to look back on and be like, oh my gosh, how did people let this happen without stopping it? Which was why you've interviewed Jim Horn, I think.
Right.
When I found his website, it was just such a relief, because it was like, thank God there's at least somebody out there that's digging this stuff up and putting it out there. And because it was really like, I was in New York City and I lived in Maine, but I remember I'd come home and try to explain to people what was happening, and you could tell they just like either didn't really believe me or didn't quite get it. But I really was like, no, this is happening to kids like right now. And I know this sounds extreme, this word, but like the word slavery, I know that sounds extreme, but like it came to mind quite a bit, like this sense of like young people being completely taken advantage of and treated like dirt for the benefit of these, you know, hedge fund investors and these charter chains. That to me, it was just so clear that it was not benefiting the kids, and if anything, they were harming them. So I know that sounds strong, but that was kind of what went through my mind at the time. So
I sense you are a good person. I don't know
you. Thank you.
But I just feel that you are a good person. And you mentioned that you watched Waiting for Superman. I want to ask you, what motivated you? What was in your mind? What were you thinking you were going to do in this new role?
Well, you know, I had kind of gotten this mentality of that closing the achievement gap was what my mission was, as this young white teacher who'd come out of, you know, liberal arts college, and that was my goal. And I had heard that these no excuses charter schools were closing the achievement gap, and you know, since that was my goal and these schools were doing it, you know, that was my kind of, saw that as well, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm supposed to be working to do this.
Very commendable.
Well, that's what I thought, and I think a lot of young kids kind of get pulled in, and then all of a sudden you end up in this place where there's so much pressure, but you know, you kind of, you get pumped up and to think that, you know, this is going to sound strong again, but kind of that white savior complex, you know, that they really do play that. You know, there's a strong sense of like, you owe this, you know, and so I think a lot of young people like I did, you know, go into it thinking that we're doing what's right and what's really good for these kids. And then you start to look and think, oh my God, that's not what this is at all.
Right. So there's a whole psychological dynamic at play here that plays with you, played with you.
Talked about James Horn. In fact, you are one of the informants in James Horn's new book, The Work Hard, Be Hard, Journeys Through No Excuses Teaching. You are our activist of the week because, first of all, you have the courage to speak about what it was like to be in a no excuses school, and you've gone on record and talked about this. But now we can find you at emilytalmadge.com. Mm-hmm. And what are we going to find on emilytalmadge.com?
Well, so the short story is that I taught in New York City, then left this charter and moved back home to Maine, where I'm from, and kind of mistakenly thought that I had left all of this madness behind and was safe and was free from all this. But then, it turned out that I was wrong, and that, in fact, the state of Maine in particular has and is being used kind of as a lab. So we're a big state, but very spread out, very rural. So we've kind of for a long time been sort of a zone to try out these new reform ideas. And one of them in particular that I've kind of been pushing out there really hard is this competency proficiency-based education thing. We're here in Maine, we're the only state with this proficiency-based diploma, and it's really like it's upending our schools from top to bottom. So about a year ago, I started to kind of dig and found out that all of the networks and foundations and corporations pushing this are the same ones that are proponents of charters and that are pushing, the Common Core and the annual testing. So I started a blog about a year ago to try to get people to see, I guess, that it's not just testing that's a problem, and it's not even just the charter movement and the testing movement, but that there's other policies that are kind of coming at us fast and furious, especially with the ESSA reauthorization. So that's kind of what my blog is now, following what's happening with this sort of, I call it like next gen ed reform, because my personal impression, personally, I was really excited at first that they were sunsetting No Child Left Behind and that this whole new bill was coming, and I kind of like was riding the wave, like, oh my gosh, things are finally going to get better. And then I started to do my own research and actually go into the legislation myself and put things together. I'm going, oh my gosh, this is a trap. There's so much in here that maybe even worse than what we've gotten. So it's kind of hard to be piecing that together while at the same time, getting, messages from our union leadership and things like that, like, right, championing what a great change this is going to be, while here in Maine, our schools are really being turned upside down. So that's kind of been my mission.
EmilyTalmadge.com is the blog. Make sure you check it out. Emily, thanks for your time. Jed, what do we tell Emily?
Emily, keep busting those pencils.